This morning, Pastor Yap brings God's word to us as we continue and conclude our Christmas sermon series this December. And our sermon text is taken from a couple of different passages. And I shall be reading these from the ESV. Do follow me along as I read them. Our first passage is taken from Genesis 3, verses 16 to 19. To the woman, he said, "I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be contrary to your husband, but he shall rule over you." And to Adam he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistle it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and dust you shall return." Our next passage is taken from John chapter 1, verses 1 and 14. Verse 1. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We have seen his glory, glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." Our last verse is from Revelation 21, verse 4. "He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away." This is the word of the Lord to us this morning, and the sermon is entitled, "Bringing God's Message of Love to a Suffering World."
Two Lord's days ago, we heard the first message on God's message to remind us to hear his voice. Last Lord's Day, we were reminded that God's message to the small and the weak. And this morning, as the concluding message to the series, is God's message of love to the sufferers. Very often we hear people say, if God is good and truly loves us, how can he allow us to suffer? This question goes back thousands of years. Job and the writers of the Psalms asked the same question. If there is a good God, why do bad things happen to good people? Why do the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer? Perhaps this morning you have this similar question. If not, you have met your non-Christian friends or even Christian friends having this question. They are inexplicable, unavoidable, everyday suffering, like sicknesses, abuses, broken relationships, injustices, betrayals, injuries, disappointments, and of course, death. We hear of babies dying in the wombs of their mothers, young people suddenly struck with the terminal illnesses, elderly people or not so elderly people affected by dementia and other degenerative diseases. There are no simple or quick answers to the painful realities of sufferings. In fact, there is something mysterious, almost incomprehensible about human suffering and evil in this world. Therefore, as God's people, We must learn, with God's help, how to handle those questions I've raised earlier, not just philosophically, but also practically. We must personally ask God to help us to equip ourselves to face sufferings and evil. And not just to face, but face it well. And also grow, mature, and at the same time, be able to give a reasonable answer to those who ask us this tough question. For this sermon, we shall be looking at, briefly, the early chapters of Genesis. We shall consider how we were created to be fragile, dependent, and how, in Jesus, God came to suffer on our behalf, and then to redeem suffering so that suffering will not have its final say, but suffering will be redeemed to become a blessing. First, let's consider what it means to be human. Consider the way we have been created by God. The creation account in Genesis 2:7 tells us that we human beings are created from the dust of the ground. Hebrew would be Adam, Ha-Adam, the man, created from Ha-Adamah, the dust. I take the creation of man from dust to mean that God chose to make us fragile, vulnerable, and dependent. God could have chosen to make you and me powerful, strong, resilient people, but instead, He chose to make us out of dust so that we are fragile, we are vulnerable people. Not only are we created to be fragile, but also our human frailty is aggravated, is intensified by evil because of the consequences of the fall. Adam and Eve disobeyed God, and their actions have profound consequences on us today. So our humanity is affected by the curse pronounced by God because Adam and Eve disobeyed God. And the curse directed to the woman we have just read earlier is linked to the pains of childbirth. And the curse directed to the man is linked to the limitation and to the futility of human life. By the sweat of his brow, he will eat his food until he returns to the ground, since he was taken from the dust, and to dust he will return. So, from the perspective of the Bible, we live in a world that was created good, but it is also a world that is broken, marred by and spoiled by sin and human suffering. So my point is this: the tragedy of human suffering is closely linked to what it means to be human. It is made worse, of course, by sin and disobedience to God. The question we ask is, are we now left to this condition? Left to this state by an uncaring, unloving God? This leads me to my second point: Jesus and the reality of human suffering. In the midst of sin and suffering, the Bible tells us God did not stay away. In fact, He Himself steps into or onto the stage. God came in human flesh, in the person of Jesus Christ on the first Christmas. To be sure, the arrival of Jesus was surrounded by enormous suffering. Herod the Great had just seized the throne of Israel through bloodshed. He guarded his title, King of the Jews, ruthlessly. And though he was not Jewish, he pretended to be a good Jew. How? By not eating pork. He built a temple for God, but he gave its administration to corrupt high priests. And he imposed taxes based on Old Testament law, but for his own benefit. That's only Herod. On the broader Roman Empire, it was equally vile and vicious. Judea existed under Rome's tyranny. Historians tell us about the political intrigue, the racial tensions and oppressions that dominated the period. You think the world we live today is very different? The same. Back in Roman days, at that point in time, all eyes were on Augustus Caesar, who demanded a census. Why? So that he could tax the people even more. And the census I refer to is the one that put Mary and Joseph in this overcrowded village of Bethlehem. So while Rome was busy making history, God arrived in the form of a helpless babe. He pitched his fleshly tent in a stable, in a manger. No, in the wake of Herod the Great and Augustus the Great, the world then overlooked the child born in the manger, who, incidentally, is the true sovereign. The Apostle John tells us in John 1:1-14, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh, incarnation, dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." On the first Christmas, as it were, at last, we hear from God himself. But we don't get an explanation about the nature of suffering and evil. Instead, God just took on human flesh, took on human form in the person of Jesus. And then he enters into the experience of suffering himself. Not vicarious, but into it. God in the person of Jesus enters into the experience of dependence. Jesus takes on human flesh. The King of Heaven became a helpless babe born in a manger. He could do nothing for himself. He needed to be fed, to be kept warm, to be cared for. The God whom Jesus reveals is this kind of God. The God whom Jesus reveals is a God who weeps at the gravesite of Lazarus. A God who is deeply moved at the suffering of a widow in the town of Nain who had lost her only son. A God who takes the suffering of the world upon himself on the cross. A God who knows betrayal, disappointment, hurt, injustice, bereavement, loneliness firsthand. On the cross, there's this terrible cry of abandonment. In the words of Psalm 22, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani?" My God, why have you forsaken me?" So in a strange and yet wonderful way, suffering is not something external to our God. Suffering actually goes into the very heart of the Godhead. Jesus brings suffering and pain, as it were, in God's own life. You see, God does not overcome the destructive effects of evil and suffering by shattering it with force. Instead, He does it by costly love. Though He did nothing wrong, Jesus was nailed to the cross, suffered excruciating pain. Why? Because He was there as our substitute. He took our guilt and pain and blame and shame in order to bring us back to God, in order to redeem human suffering. Appropriately, we can say we worship a suffering God. And this is what well-known Christian scholar and pastor John Stott writes. He said, "I could never myself believe in God if it were not for the cross. The only God I believe in is the God on the cross. In the real world of pain, how could one worship a God who was immune to it? And in imagination, I have turned instead to that lonely, twisted, tortured figure on the cross. Nails through hands and feet, back lacerated, limbs wrenched, brow bleeding from thorn pricks, mouth dry, thirsty, plunged into God-forsaken darkness. That is the God for me. He laid aside His immunity to pain."
Third,
suffering can be redeemed. As God in the person of Jesus enters into the suffering through the cross, He brings us redemption. He brings us restoration. This, if I may submit to you, is one of the deepest mysteries of the cross. Through the suffering and death of Jesus, evil is destroyed. New life springs up. So God's plan for this age is not to abolish suffering, but to redeem it, to restore it, to bring blessing and healing out of suffering and pain. There is nothing, however evil, however twisted, however apparently meaningless, which cannot be, in some sense, be transformed, be changed by our loving God and turned into blessing and healing and even joy. The statement I just made actually is a statement of faith. It's not something that we always see with our own eyes or feel with our heart. How can a terrible thing, evil thing, be redeemed and be restored? But it is true. And just look at the tragic crucifixion and death of Jesus on the cross. Death returned to something victorious. Resurrection. God turns tragedy into triumph. The death of Jesus did not end in tragedy. It ended in resurrection. The disciples' hopes and dreams must have been dashed when they witnessed the crucifixion and death of their master. But it was only for a short time, because later, 3 days later, they witnessed how God took the tragedy of the cross and brought something triumphant out of it, resurrection. Jesus knew the disciples' hearts were going to be broken when He was crucified, but He also knew their hearts would be overjoyed when they saw Him resurrected. Before the resurrection, the disciples seemed weak and scared. But after they saw the resurrected Jesus, they were filled with joy, filled with new boldness they never had. They became fearless. They suffered persecution and imprisonment. In fact, they considered it as an honor to suffer, and even to die for Jesus. Everything was different after God took the tragedy and turned it into triumph. God turned the bad and make it good. God can take any tragedy in your life, in my life, and work it for our good and for His glory. George Frederick Handel was at a low point in his life. His money was gone, his creditors hounded him, threatening him with imprisonment. His right side became paralyzed, his health deteriorated. For a brief time, he was tempted to give up. In the midst of the darkness he was experiencing, he picked himself up with God's help and began to do the only thing he knew to do: write music. Out of that despair, he wrote The Messiah, which many consider to be the greatest piece of church music in history. You probably have heard The Messiah the last couple of weeks. God can redeem the tragedy in your life and in my life and transform it for our good and for His glory. No calamity, no catastrophe in your personal life, in our church, in our nation, Singapore, or even in our world today, is beyond our God to transform. Even when things seem to be at their worst, our gracious God can turn them around in a matter of days, hours, even in a moment. You may be, this morning, very likely, facing an impossible situation. Irreversible, incurable, unchangeable. But I want you to think again. The God of the Bible raised Jesus from the dead. Is there anything too hard for Him? You wonder if there's any hope in your schooling, in your career, in your family situation. All appear hopeless. But God has the power to change gloom to joy, despair to hope. Christ's death ends in victory. Nothing, not even death, can overcome, can overpower the love of our God, the grace of our God, the goodness of our God. No matter what you are going through, God can use it to benefit you somehow, some way, if not soon, definitely later, for His glory. God's plan for this age is not to abolish human suffering, but it is to redeem it, to change it, to make it a blessing. He transformed suffering into blessing and healing, and He will continue to do it. And Revelation 21 verse 4 tells us confidently that suffering and pain will finally one day be abolished. He, here is God, will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Suffering, pain, death will be destroyed eventually. Not in this age, but in the age to come. And that's God's promise to you and me. This past months had been difficult because I had to deal with people who pass on. Elder Quek, Helen Chan, 2 days ago, Michael Chua. People I knew. But I look at the promise of God. One day, we shall meet again. One day, death will not have the final say. This is our hope. This is our confidence. We look at Jesus. He conquered death. And He says He will come back for us one day. What's our response? When you are confronted with suffering, with pain or unexpected trouble, don't ask why. Why, God? No. Ask what? Ask what? What, Lord, would you like me to learn? What, Lord, would you like me to do? Life difficulties and challenges are opportunities for you and I to seek God in a deeper and more personal way, and to grow in our understanding, in our intimacy, in our closeness with this God who loves us so dearly that He gave us His only begotten Son. God's promise to you and to me as we go through suffering and pain is found in Isaiah 43, verses 1 to 3. But now, thus said the Lord who created you, O Jacob, referring to Israel, He who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by my name. You are mine. This promise can be applied to you and me who have trusted in Jesus as our Savior, because Jesus truly has redeemed us, brought us back for Himself. Then He goes on to say, God says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. Notice, God does not promise to deliver you or me from our suffering. We still have to go through the waters, through the fire. But the promise of God is, I will be with you in your suffering. You are not alone. So do you feel deserted, abandoned in your suffering? God is saying to you, I'm right here by your side. I know your grief. I know your pain. I know your hurt. I have redeemed you. I love you with an everlasting love. I can help you. Perhaps this morning you are not the one who is suffering pain or grief or sorrow. But do you know of someone who is suffering from the loss of a loved one, loss of health, loss of job, loss of money? Please go by this person and share with him or her that there is a God who loves, who knows, who cares, and who can help them in their suffering and pain. How does God bring His love to the suffering world? He came. He came in the person of His Son, born of the first Christmas day. He came to identify with human suffering. He came to share in our grief and pain. He did not come to abolish suffering. Instead, He came to redeem it, to transform it, to change it. He changed it into blessing, to healing. And He promises us one day, suffering and pain and even death will be finally destroyed. Yes, we live in a world dominated by sin and its consequences, sorrow, suffering, disease, and death. But when Jesus returns and claims His full victory, as stated in Revelation 21 verse 4, He will wipe away every tear from your eyes. There will be no more death, mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. What tragedy, suffering would you like God to redeem in your life today? Your sorrow, your hurt, your disappointment, your fear of unknown future, your struggle with sin and temptation, your inferiority complex, your insecurity. If you believe the cross is a symbol of redemption, Jesus was bodily raised from the dead, never to die again, and that our current suffering will give way to an eternal joy in Jesus Christ, then this morning you can believe that God can take whatever you are facing right now and transform it into something good and make you more like His Son, Jesus. It may not happen overnight, but it will happen. You can confidently know this because God has given His Son to you. Here in His love. Let's now pause and bring whatever that you want God to redeem in your life this morning to Him in prayer.